Great morning, everyone, and welcome to yet another episode of Thank God for Monday. I'm Brother Greg Cellini of the Franciscan Brothers of Brooklyn in the Office of Mission, Ministry, and Interfaith Dialogue at St. Francis College in beautiful Brooklyn, New York. My great pleasure to be back with you again today. The purpose of our show, Thank God for Monday, is to inspire you, our audience, to take personal responsibility for your professional satisfaction. We want to provide you hope, healing, and peace in these unprecedented, turbulent, uncertain times. Motivate you to search deep inside yourself in the quest for fulfillment. Listeners, it's really up to you is how to utilize the information we provide today. Take full accountability for the decisions you make and a resulting outcome. And one of the goals of our show, Thank God for Monday, is to introduce role models of people who take very bold steps in their work lives. This is a very special period in our workplace and world. First, it's the month of October, rapidly becoming known as Franciscan Month. Second, this Wednesday, October the 18th, is Unity Day. Thus, we are honored today to have with us a very, very special guest. Her name is Dr. Dorothy Suskin. Dorothy is a writer, researcher, and assistant professor in the Education and Counseling Department at Longwood University in Farmville, Virginia. She researches and writes on a variety of topics, including workplace bullying, sexual assault, creativity, healthy workplace cultures, and women in the workplace. Dorothy is also the author of the timely and enlightening book entitled Workplace Bullying: Finding Your Way to Big Tent Belonging. Great morning and welcome to Thank God for Monday, Dorothy.
Well, thanks for having me, Greg. I'm so happy to be here.
The honor is all ours. Kindly share with the listeners and me from what city and state you're speaking from today, please.
Oh, yes, absolutely. So I work in Farmville, Virginia, which is where Longwood is located, but I live with my family in Richmond, Virginia.
Oh, what a beautiful, beautiful part of God's country. You've just made this host and many listeners very, very jealous. That's for sure. Dorothy, sadly, we've only got 30 minutes. We could talk for hours about your incredible background, this fabulous book you've written. We're going to jump right into the deep end of the pool. Share with us, please, Dorothy. You are an expert, certainly, on creativity. What are some of the characteristics of creative employees?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. Well, when we've studied them, they tend to be really productive. They have lots of expertise, usually in lots of different diverse fields. They're very authentic. We see that they're very intrinsically motivated and often very mission-driven. They're curious, like they don't want to just have surface conversations. They ask lots of questions. They tend to be somewhat like uninterested in office politics. Like they're really just there because they're fascinated with the world, highly ethical. A lot of times we see them as big change agents, and they just kind of do their own thing. They're just a little bit different in some way because they're just so fascinated with the world around them.
This is so amazing. I had a 29-year career in pharmaceuticals prior to becoming a Franciscan brother, and you're definitely describing a lot of the people I used to work with in big pharma. Let's now talk about workplace abuse. You've been doing some amazing research in this area. Share with us, please, Dorothy, about some of this research.
Oh, absolutely. So my last study, which is what my book is about, is I did a narrative inquiry study. And narrative inquiry is a type of research where we ask people, instead of asking specific questions, we ask them just to share their story and about a certain or a shared phenomenon. So in this case, workplace abuse. And then from those narratives, we try to kind of figure out what's the setting of the story in general, what's the plot, plot, who are the characters. So for this study, I collected basic demographic information. And of course, everything is completely anonymous. Like that's part of our ethical protocol. And I just asked two questions, like tell a story about a time that you were bullied in the workplace and tell a story of a time that you worked in a creative environment. And that's it. We purposely don't ask lots of questions because how you ask questions influences how people answer. So sure. The more open that we can leave it, the better. And for this past study, I collected the stories of over 200 people from 10 different countries, 35 states, representing, I think, 36 different professional industries. It was really fascinating. And then I followed up the collection of narrative stories by doing interviews. I think I interviewed about 50 people.
Oh, amazing, amazing research, certainly. Now, this great book of yours is entitled Workplace Bullying. But it's interesting because the phrase workplace bullying can mean different things to different people. How do you define workplace bullying, and what are some of the reasons why specific individuals get bullied?
Oh, yeah, I know. That's a tough one. There's so many good definitions out there. The one that I tend to use is that workplace bullying is really the degradation of a person's character through like using tools like gossip, manipulation, sabotage, gaslighting, exclusion, ostracization, with really the goal of making them an outsider. So we think about it revoking their belonging, belonging to a community, but more importantly, belonging to themselves. And I think one thing that's important to remember is so often in the workplace, workplace bullying is used for things that it actually isn't. And when we're talking about workplace bullying, this is, it's not a personality conflict. It's not teasing. It's not like a national, like just a natural part of a competitive work environment. It's really this like career altering, life threatening assault on one's like humanity. And that's a great question as far as why people get bullied. And the three things that really came up that were salient themes in the research, and I want to be clear, these are not causal. So it's not that nobody causes workplace bullying. These are just some characteristics that the people tend to be creative. So they're different in some way, and they are overly productive. And so they kind of shake the status quo of what's possible, and that can make people uncomfortable. And then the third thing is at times they call out bad behavior or whistleblow. And sometimes they're all three of those things, but those appear to be like the three primary reasons that somebody becomes a target for an attack.
This is so fascinating, being creative and maybe being a whistleblower and being a great worker, being extra productive. That these may be people who stand out. Is it possible that others almost, I hate to say this, but get a little jealous of them or feel threatened by them, and that's why they would bully them?
Yeah, I think you're right on that, Greg. I do. I think that people can be jealous. It makes them uncomfortable because, you know, the creators are coming in and they're like, hey, what if we looked about this? You know, what if we looked at this in a new way? And that makes people really nervous at times, unfortunately.
I can empathize with that, certainly, no doubt about it. Now, I'm a big fan, and our listeners are, of workplace culture. We love to talk and we love to study workplace cultures. Are there some characteristics of workplace cultures that tend to have more bullying? I hate to ask this question, but I must.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, some of the things that we see from the data is cultures that have a lot of bullying tend to have a strict hierarchy, and which is difficult to penetrate. And a lot of times, the people that are at the top are there because they are yes people. They just do what is asked of them. A lot of times, we see that there is a lack of transparency. So if there are problems, people aren't aware of what's going on behind behind the scenes. There often is a violation of people's boundaries. So there might be talk of like, wow, we want people to have, we want to really value people's mental health, but then people are berated for not answering emails at 1 in the morning or,
Oh
told that
no.
they're Yeah, absolutely. Are told that they're not contributing. A lot of times, too, we see that there are these norms where there's a lot of homogeneous thinking. So, in order to kind of belong here, everyone needs to think the same thing. And when problems arise, which I mean, of course, they arise anywhere that we work, instead of being like, wow, I'm really, let's get curious about what's happening here, there is a lot of blame and shame. And also, when things happen or when we're trying to support different employees, there is a lack of constructive feedback. So instead of saying, hey, these are some things that you could do possibly to improve, and also a lot of conflict avoidance. So when there are problems, instead of kind of talking about it openly in a meeting, there's like the meeting before the meeting or the meeting after the meeting, right? But like the tough conversations are not happening during the meeting. And if people do speak up, we see in toxic cultures, if people are asking too many questions or they're like, wow, they're calling out bad behavior, that they are retaliated against. And a lot of times it's really hard to figure out like what that retaliation is, but it could be as simple as no longer inviting that person to meetings, or perhaps one of her projects loses funding.
Oh, wow. This sounds like a lose, lose, lose situation all around.
Absolutely.
Now, this workplace bullying, does it follow a predictive cycle, if you will? And if so, how does it tend to unfold? Help us out, please, Dorothy.
Yeah, that is such a good question. And I think it's like one of the most important questions, because I think of someone like Kubler-Ross, who has been so influential in teaching us about the stages of grief. And so people kind of recognize when they've had a great loss, where they are in that. But most people don't know what workplace bullying looks like. And so they tend to be in a place where they really are being bullied, but don't realize it until it's a little too late. So yeah, I can tell you a little bit about it. First,
Please.
one thing that might be helpful to know, it's kind of fascinating because it feeds into the cycle, is in my research and the research of others, we see that there are certain characters of workplace bullying, and then that will kind of inform the plot cycle. So usually we have the creative who, we talked about, well-liked, innovative, not interested in office politics. And then there is the bully. And in my research, I've called that person the dragon. And that's usually the person that really enforces the unofficial rule book. And usually an organization has one main dragon, because you can't, they fight it out if you have more than one. And that dragon tends to have basic content knowledge, but is not particularly well versed. And so I think can get a little uncomfortable when someone comes along that's so accomplished. And like most bad behavior doesn't happen from a dragon unless we call like bad followers. So they have to kind of have a group that follows them along, because the dragon is hesitant to do the dirty work himself or herself. They're usually getting someone to do it for them. And that kind of leads into the other two groups. From the data, I had a group that I call the shapeshifters. And those are those people that really would like to be like the powerful dragon, but perhaps don't quite have the charisma to operate at that level. So instead, just feel that power by doing the dirty work of the dragon. And so they're kind of like that close inner circle. And then you have this other group of people, which are fascinating because they really do make a difference in the office. And I call them community builders. So these are really lovely people that want to do good work, but they very much understand, like in education, we talk about the hidden curriculum, what's not said. And they abide by the code of conduct, and they don't want to stand out, and they don't want to cause problems. So they're very much, sometimes I'll call them willowy, like they go along to get along. So even when something happens, they tend not to say anything about it, even if they know that someone's being bullied because they don't want to stand out. And then the last two is you'll have these two people that are at the head, and it's usually going to be a figurehead or a leader. And a figurehead is more that person at the top that tends to be really interested in appearances, maybe a little insecure, and because of that, she micromanages quite a bit. She really insists on a strict hierarchy and doesn't want diverse collaborations. And she doesn't want to rock the boat. So when something goes wrong, she is more like one to kind of sweep it under the rug. And dragons figure out the figurehead, and they can be very charismatic. And so they will kind of create this narrative for the figurehead and really have like a lot of power over her. And then the last
Oh,
one, which is I call the unicorn or the leader, because we basically never see this person. I've met them maybe
wow.
once. And that's when you have someone at the top that's a content expert. They're innovative. They usually like got their position by disrupting the system. They're very much flat hierarchy. They want everyone to have a voice. But that a lot of times those tend to be people that are founders or folks that are just have a that are so smart and so confident that they like to be challenged. Like they're not worried about it. So with that, now do you want me to quickly tell you like what how it possibly unfolds?
Please,
I
please.
and I'm not the first one to figure this out. Like a lot of different people have studied, but from my own research, I kind of saw it unfold in into kind of six different steps. So first of all, like stage one or step one is that kind of target identification where somebody is targeted for those reasons we talked about before, that
Right.
they're creative, something like that. And then that stage two is this, I call it jealousy and battle plans. And a lot of times the bully or the dragon will pretend to be friends with this person. And that kind of encourages the creative to let her guard down, and the dragon will encourage kind of some disclosure that the creative later, wishes that she hadn't shared. And a lot of times the creative will share her strengths and the dragon will use that against her later. And then step three is the precipitating event. And it's important to know that that's not the cause by any means of the bullying, but it is the reason that the dragon kind of grabs onto to turn other people against her. So it could be that the creative gets a promotion or gets highlighted for a big marketing campaign, and the dragon will be like, "Oh my gosh, she gets that promotion, then the rest of us are going to lose our responsibilities, or she's getting all the accolades, she's making us look bad."
Oh,
And that kind of turns to that stage four, like the underground battle. And that is when a lot of times the dragon will go around and almost do secret interviews with different people around the organization. Of course, unofficial, but like, you might want to stay away from Dorothy. I'm worried about her. Or did you see these things that she did? And start to
wow.
kind of plant these seeds of doubt. And sometimes it is kind of couched in like false benevolence, like, "Wow, she looks so tired. I'm worried about her. Or I
Oh
think
my
she's taking
goodness.
on too much." And then at that point is that stage five where it really escalates. And unfortunately, a lot of times this is the first moment that the person realizes that she's being bullied. And a lot of times the dragon will go to human resources and say, "I think we need to put this person," say it's Dorothy, "on a PIP or a performance improvement plan."
Oh
And this is
no.
person that usually has been, just exceptional in her field, tons of accolades. A lot of times, this is when the person will overtly be left out of social events, and there'll be a push for bystanders to join in. And a lot of creatives will say that's what hurt the most is not the bullying from the dragon, but that people that she thought were her friends and confidants turned against her. And then really that last stage, and it can last a variety of time periods, but usually around 6 to 18 months. Unfortunately, the research shows the majority of people, like in the upward 70%, end up losing their job, and the person starts to
Oh.
suffer really significant physical and emotional health consequences.
Jeez. Oh, thank you for taking us through that. That's painful to hear, but ouch. But indeed, very, very enlightening. Now, I'm just curious if I'm an employee naturally and I think I'm being bullied, are there some strategies that an employee like me can use to go forward, maybe?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the first one is before you take a job. Of course, this is, a precursor, but just kind of figure out who was in the job before you and if there's been lots of turnover. So if there's been lots of turnover, that doesn't necessarily mean anything, but it could. But as far as once you're in the job, to look at really carefully at the company handbook and kind of see, are there any bullying policies? Unfortunately, in the United States, we're one of the few industrialized nations that really doesn't have protective work legislation outside of protective class. So if you have like any kind of statement about bullying or harassment in the handbook is really helpful. The next thing I tell people is document, 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 and really like just the facts, like the date of when something happened, what happened, the people involved, and then what were the consequences. And because that's going to be really important later, because it's so easy to forget. And then also, it's helpful a different type of documentation is to keep a journal. There was a gentleman named Penny Baker who does a lot of research on just the power of writing and how that can really soothe someone's emotional turmoil. As far as meetings, we know that a lot of times that bullying can happen in meetings. So, if possible, especially when things get bad, because this can be hard to do when you're kind of early in your career. But if you're going into a meeting, especially if it's with your boss that's bullying you or some coworkers that are bullying you, to have a really strong sense, ask for the agenda ahead of time and ask
Beautiful.
who's going to be there. And then if you get off on another topic, you can say, wow, that's an important thing to talk about. But since it's not on the agenda, can we revisit that another time? And then when you're in a conversation, to really insist on civil exchanges. And sometimes that means is, I really want to continue talking about this, but if you're going to talk to me in that manner, we're going to have to end this and come back to it. And another way, I mean, I always have my journal. There is a lot of power in saying, could you repeat that? Because I want to make sure that I write down exactly what you just said.
Oh
And
my goodness.
it's helpful to have that information later, and it also makes people more cognizant about the things that they're saying. And I think, too, having strict boundaries, sometimes that means not picking up the phone when your boss calls. Let them leave a voicemail so you can decide, because sometimes you just need a little bit of space so that you can think. And I would say, lastly, it is imperative. There's so much research on this, is to have a really close friend circle that's not at work. So that could be your husband, your partner, your best friend, your sister, your mother, but somebody that is going to love you unconditionally, that you can count on, that is not in this work environment.
Wow, what great advice to have that support network outside of the workplace. We could talk all day, Dorothy. Believe it or not, we've only got about 7 minutes. I still
Oh,
have some important questions to ask you. You have referred to before about emotional and physical fallout, if you will. Share with us a little bit of what is the fallout of workplace abuse on individuals, please?
yeah, a lot of times people say, I don't understand like what the big deal is. It's just a personality conflict. And we really know that that's not true. There's a man called Harold Garfinkel. He wrote something back, I think, in 1956 about a degradation ceremony. And I think that that is where the deep emotional pain comes from. And I won't go through all that now, but the basic idea is that a community pushes somebody out because they break group norms. And they don't simply say you're a bad worker, they say you're a bad person. And so it really hijacks someone's narrative. And sometimes we talk about that a lot of the pain comes in because it shatters people's assumption that the world is benevolent, that the world is predictable. And there's a woman named Janoff Bullman who's done a lot of research on that. And she is amazing. And it really creates almost this moral injury. And we usually usually think about a moral injury when it's a betrayal of something that we believe is right by someone in power in a high-stakes situation. And oh gosh, yeah, Dr. Shea is a great person to look at if you're interested in that. But some of the fallout of that, a lot of times it's primary care doctors that first notice because it's like high blood pressure, heart palpitations, hair loss, trouble sleeping, hypervigilance. People can suffer from complex PTSD, anxiety, depression, and of course, and just the worst of all cases, suicide. And it's really worth looking at. There's a woman named Dr. Freud or Fried and Jennifer, and she does something on institutional betrayal that when we go through a trauma, we have all the pain from the trauma. But when it happens in an institution that you thought was going to protect you, whether it's a religious institution, the military, a nonprofit, that there's this deep sense of betrayal, and that amplifies all of the original hurt.
Wow, I could see where the fallout is really very, very significant. No doubt about that. Now, might you have a strategy or two for healing someone who goes through all of this trauma and being bullied in the workplace? Any advice about healing subsequently, please?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think one, doing that daily writing that I talked about that Penny Baker suggests is really, really helpful. And sometimes I'll even like set a timer. So instead of ruminating on the pain all day, saying, you know what, I'm going to think about this for 15 minutes, and then I'm going to, you know, literally and metaphorically put it back up on the shelf. Also, it can be painful but helpful to create a timeline. We know that trauma is often stored in our senses. And so it is hard to conceptualize it in a linear framework. And so if you can create a timeline, it takes a long time to do that of exactly what happened. And then building on that, it can be helpful for people to explore in writing what was violated. And a lot of time was what was violated that was so important to me, a sense of fair play, a sense of kindness, a sense of morality. And that's going to be different for different people. And I think two is to identify those moments when things were so difficult, yet you stood in your morals and you stood in your ethics and you did the right thing, and to really celebrate that. And I would say last, there's a gentleman named Mario Martinez that talks about kind of almost having a ceremony where you're deciding about what you need to disconnect from in order to move on. And a lot of times you can write a letter and then burn it. Doesn't need to be something that's sent, but we lack rituals so often in the United States, and some kind of ceremony that allows you to almost have this rebirth in a sense can be really powerful.
Oh, that sounds very life-saving and nourishing, no doubt about that. Just a couple of days away, Dorothy, Unity Day, October the 18th, rapidly approaching. Might you have a final thought or two for our listeners and me pertaining to getting together and unity in the workplace, certainly?
Absolutely. I would say the primary finding from my latest study was that bullying is so damaged because it damages somebody's sense of belonging to their community and to themselves. So, and belonging is very different than fitting in. Belonging is that we love you and cherish you exactly how you are. We don't need you to change or be somebody else. So I think the sense of making sure that everyone in our community belongs, and for parents and teachers and religious leaders to take that really seriously and talk about like what are specific ways we can make people belong. So when I was a middle school principal, we would talk about, okay, the lunchroom is a really scary place. How can we make sure that nobody comes in here and has nowhere to sit? You know, what can you do when you walk in and you're walking through the halls and there's someone to the side and she's all alone? Like these like very, very specific strategies.
Wow.
And I think about as a parent, I like when my son goes off to school, I'll be like, what are you going to do today to make sure someone feels seen and that they belong? And then I ask him that when he comes home, not just how are your grades, you know, what did you eat for lunch, but how did you make someone feel like they belong?
Oh, that's so beautiful. And we need more and more to make that a part of the education experience and the workplace experience. We've saved, Dorothy, the most important question for last. From where can our loyal listeners purchase Workplace Bullying? How can they best follow you, please?
Oh, that's a thanks for asking that. Roman and Littlefield has been so wonderful. They are my publisher, and I'm so thankful. But the book is also sold everywhere imaginable, Amazon, all those good things. And as far as finding me, my website is just my name, dorothysuskin.com. I'm also a regular contributor on Psychology Today. I've written lots of articles. So if you Google me, I think you'll find a bunch of different things. And people reach out to me a lot by email, and I really appreciate that. And I'm on Twitter and LinkedIn as well. I'm such a private person that I'm not as good on social media as I should be, but I'm very good at answering emails, and I do love Zooming and talking with people about their experiences.
Listeners, no excuse. We've got a fabulous Franciscan with us today during Franciscan Month. She could have held on to all this good. No, she wrote this great book. She came on, thank God, for Monday today, got up extra early to be with us. Indeed, buy one copy of this great book, Workplace Bullying, for yourself. Buy a couple more. Give them as gifts. You know, the holiday season, not that far away. But indeed, share the good, just like Dorothy has done with us this morning, and follow her, be it on the tweet and other places. Let me give you her name, the full spelling of her name, Dorothy, Dorothy, Suskind, Suskind. Dorothy, we can't thank you enough for gracing the airwaves of Thank God for Monday today and WSOU. We've been enlightened. We've been very, very inspired during Franciscan Month with Unity Day coming up, the importance of really paying attention to bullying in the workplace and do whatever we can to make it a real unified workplace and eliminate all of this bullying. So continued success, joy, happiness in all this fabulous work that you're doing.
Oh, thank you, Greg. This was the best part of my week. I'm so glad to be here. I know it's going to be the highlight.
And thank you very much. The honor was all ours. Listeners, guess what? Once again, we're out of time. Greg saying our hope and prayer is that when you wake up on Monday morning, just like Dorothy does, you'll say, thank God for Monday. Until next week's episode, have a great week, everyone. Bye-bye.